It's like you have, if you have decentralized money, but you can only use it in centralized custodial venues, have we really accomplished what Satoshi set out to accomplish? Probably not.
Welcome to the Staking Insider Podcast, where we explore the frontiers of staking with guests from leading protocols in the space. I'm Mirko, CEO and co-founder of Stake & Rewards, and today we're happy to have with us Jacob Phillips, co-founder of Lombard. Welcome.
Awesome. Hey, thanks a lot for having me.
Awesome. Yeah, I mean, you guys have been crushing it. I'm just looking at the table at Stake Awards with like the Babylon Finality providers. Lombard is up top, 23,000 BTC.
Staked amazing. In there. Well, thank you very much. Appreciate it. Yeah, it's been a hell of a ride. Yeah, we kicked this project off in like late April, early May, and shipped, I think, late August, early September. And yeah, the receptiveness has been massive. DeFi protocols have loved it. But I think it's just the beginning. It's important to remember that we're like so early in the grand scheme of BTC DeFi. We're onboarding like just the earliest, like the most degens of degens in the space. And there's a lot more to go.
Yeah, it's insane. I mean, 0.3% in like staked in Bitcoin with Babylon in particular. I guess it's like 0. I mean, you guys make a big chunk of the total Babylon already now.
Yeah,
but yeah. I mean,
exactly.
0.3. That's nothing.
Yeah.
It's very fascinating to see how much potential there still is. And I guess you haven't unlocked like the big Bitcoin holders yet, right?
Definitely.
The MicroStrategies of the world.
Exactly. Yeah. Far from it. We'll need much more secure mechanisms, I think, to get those guys on board, and we'll need to give the space some time to mature, make sure everything's like super, super robust before those guys will get in. But I think what has been most interesting about even the folks who we know probably won't convert for a year or two on end is that everybody's interested in it. I mean, Babylon had the three largest mining pools running Finality providers on testnet. The biggest Bitcoiners in the world are exploring this. They're interested in the idea of putting their Bitcoin to work. Obviously, there's some trust assumptions you've got to get them comfortable around, but it's coming for sure.
Yeah. I guess it's also diversifying for the Bitcoin mining pools. It seems like, yeah, they are. They're all very, very interested. They have big bags of BTC.
Yeah, exactly. Well, Bitcoin, I mean, I think for those guys, it's just another way for Bitcoiners to earn yield. Bitcoin mining pools have been operating as pseudo exchanges or you know, some firm offering financial services to Bitcoin miners for quite some time. It's not surprising that the opportunity to stake a very sort of low risk form of yield production would be attractive to these sort of folks. I think it makes a ton of sense. And I can only hope that more and more people offering Bitcoin yield services start to look at this as like a viable path forward. I think historically, the only way you could earn yield on your Bitcoin has been lending it out to market makers and prop funds, which turned out to not be such a great idea when, you know, the whole ecosystem, BlockFi, Celsius, everybody else sort of blew up. And now we finally have like the first form of yield generation that's exclusively technical risk, not credit risk.
Yeah, fully trustless in a way. Well, I mean, there's just technical risk, like you said. I mean, to me, it's fascinating. Like before Babylon and Lombard came around, it was basically everyone was saying like, yeah, like Bitcoin staking is going to be really hard to convert the maxis to stake any BTC and take on any risks and so on. But I mean, looking at like the different Babylon caps and then like you guys kind of crushing it in the cap 3 of Babylon, it doesn't feel any way like that this is real, right? This kind of narrative that people don't like, are not like Bitcoin maxis are not comfortable.
Yeah.
It's like rather the opposite, right?
Yeah, exactly. I think that's always been a little bit of a cop out of an answer when people try to give an excuse for why Bitcoin DeFi won't succeed. It's so like the fundamental idea that like Bitcoin is the decentralized money, the core collateral within crypto ecosystem feels undeniable to me. The idea that like ETH should always reign supreme, it feels a little bit silly, you know? Certainly, I think they're comparable. ETH and Bitcoin both play a role as collateral within ecosystems. But the idea that Bitcoin will, for the entirety of time in DeFi, will remain an outsider is a little bit wild. And it feels like this thesis that has been, that everyone's known has been true. And, you know, everybody's known that Bitcoin DeFi was going to pick up eventually. It's just a matter of like finding the right catalyst, the sort of jolt to the system that makes people actually start paying attention to this. And, you know, I think for a long time, Bitcoin DeFi or using Bitcoin as collateral just hasn't been all that attractive. You know, if you're holding Bitcoin in your wallet and you're trying to decide if you should go, you know, throw it into WBTC and throw it into like Aave or something like that, where you're earning, you know, 10 bips of yield on an annual basis, maybe not worth it. You know, you're taking on a lot of additional trust assumptions for not much yield. Babylon, I think, has been the first large scale yield opportunity for Bitcoin holders on chain that has turned some heads, where it's like, now they're thinking about, you know, if Babylon is offering yield in the range of like 10 bips or something like that, people probably wouldn't get excited. Like, you're not even compensating yourself for smart contract risk at that point, as is the case with a lot of DeFi. But with the sort of excitement around Babylon, I mean, you saw what sort of happened in the Eigenlayer ecosystem, where, you know, Eigenlayer became this massive, massive catalyst for bootstrapping liquid staking tokens and yield bearing collateral that was built on top, like liquid, you know, restaking tokens. You're kind of seeing the same thing happen in Bitcoin DeFi, where now there's finally enough of a catalyst to get people excited about trying stuff out. And so, yeah, Bitcoin maxis are paying attention for sure. I think they are figuring out if they can or cannot stomach the sort of security risks. But I mean, you saw like one user deposit 10,000 Bitcoin into Babylon directly from their own wallet, like not through an LST, but still, I mean, I think that's a huge step in the right direction. $1 billion in one transaction is like pretty crazy.
That's insane. Do you know who that is?
Yeah. Or... I think it was me, but it might have been, it's possible it's some other people. Yeah, there's been some speculation, but I don't think anything confirmed. Yeah. I mean, there's probably only like a couple people, groups, entities in the space that could, you know, slap $1 billion on chain with one move.
And I mean, this means if you deposit like $1 billion in there, like they've done their research.
100%.
They didn't just like... Yeah, on a good mood deposit this. I mean, they must have done very, very proper due diligence into Babylon and everything. And yeah, it's a huge confirmation for trustless self-custodial Bitcoin staking. Yes, it works. Yeah, and
absolutely. And I think this is what's been most interesting about, you know, dealing with a lot of the OG miners, large Bitcoin whales in Asia and some of the large like Bitcoin funds, is that they are, I mean, by the nature and principles of Bitcoin as an asset, they have, you know, sort of taken to heart that like the name of the game is to not trust anyone. You know, I don't trust you. I don't trust that exchange. I don't trust your DeFi protocol. I don't even trust custodians sometimes. You know, this is what we hear from users. So there really is like a great thesis for building non-custodial finance within the Bitcoin ecosystem, arguably even a better thesis than doing it for other assets, which may be a little bit more risk on for users. So I think that's the real take here, is like, yeah, there's going to be some challenges, but I bet DeFi finds product market fit with BTC holders, the most principled of users in the space, you know, to you know, even more significant extent than it does, you know, some of these more degenerate alt L1s.
No, that's great. What do you, I'm actually very curious on your take. Like, what do you think? What does it take to unlock like MicroStrategy to stake their BTC, for example? I mean, it kind of, at some point there will probably, it just feels like a natural progression when you invest in Bitcoin and then you stake it, you kind of feel like you're missing out on something if you don't make it productive, right? Yeah.
Definitely. It's a good question. It's going to be a long-term battle. Like, the name of the game is creating security mechanisms that are battle tested and like easy to understand. And right now we're not quite there. Like, I think there's a big education game here. I actually think a good analog here is looking at what Marathon did. So Marathon, I guess they rebranded to Mara, big US public miner. It made a lot of noise for being the first Bitcoin miner to, I think they made some like commitment to never sell a Bitcoin. So they mine a Bitcoin and they just hold it on their balance sheet. And they have a ton of BTC. I want to say it's like 60,000, but maybe I'm making that number up. And they, for the first time, decided to put some of those assets to work. And what they did was it's like through a lending facility, presumably lending to large institutions and market makers, very, very safe lending. But there is demand for putting Bitcoin to work. I think that is clear if you can find a safe mechanism. Credit risk is really comfortable for people in TradFi. You know, it's something I sort of understand. Usually credit risk doesn't blow up. You know, there are some people I think you can trust in. And so, you know, if you're a guy like Michael Saylor trying to think about putting your Bitcoin to work, I think, you know, lending is probably the easiest. But I think over time, people are going to sort of laugh at the approachability of credit risk. Like, staking is an incredible mechanism because it only relies on technical risk of battle-tested systems at this point. And with Babylon Bitcoin staking, you can only screw yourself. You control the key that signs. If you double sign, you get slashed. If you do not double sign, there is no way Babylon or any other party can slash you. Like, this is an incredibly cruel mechanism. So if they start to understand that, I think that people in the future, like the most risk-averse users, will only accept technical risk and not credit risk when they think about putting their, you know, Bitcoin or other assets to work.
Yeah, absolutely. I have a tweet open from you here saying, like, making Bitcoin a productive asset on-chain is the best thing that could happen to BTC. I might even argue it's a necessity. Do you want to like elaborate a little bit?
Yeah, definitely. So this tweet was a quote tweet of a discussion about how exporting ETH from ETH L1 to L2s was like calling into question the whole security of the chain. And the argument by the tweet was basically that like Bitcoin doing the same is like even worse. And I think it's actually far, far from it. Like the idea that Bitcoin becoming more productive on chain is a bad thing, I think just baffles me. It's like, it's probably the best thing that could have happened. You think about like how you break down the value of Bitcoin. Bitcoin is entirely a monetary premium. Like there's very little like fundamental value you can point to. It all is sort of encapsulated in this idea of Bitcoin as money, right? And the fact that we now have institutions and you know, the biggest governments in the world starting to accept Bitcoin as an alternative to government currencies, I think is massive. Like that to me is like solidifying the foundation of Bitcoin as a monetary primitive. You compare that to something like ETH or Solana or something else, it's like the assets are very, very different. The monetary premium is big, but it's very, very sort of uncertain. Unlike Bitcoin that has like only ever tried to do one thing. It is a store of value. It is decentralized money. That is it. We will never do anything more. This is what it is. Like Bitcoin has sort of like filled that niche very, you know, in a very strong way. It sort of fulfilled that goal. Everything else is kind of trying to copycat that. And so what's interesting is like, I think back to last cycle DeFi summer when DeFi was really kicking up, ETH became the primary collateral that people were holding to transact on chain. They were using it as a collateral in DeFi protocols. They were using it as a base asset for trading pairs on chain. They were using it as a base asset for trading NFTs. All of this was sort of solidifying a new foundation for ETH as money. And I even think about like my user behavior during that time. While I knew that Bitcoin was money, I was using ETH as money a little bit. So I think it started to like conflict the meme a little bit. But this goes back to my point earlier about there's no real fundamental reason that should exist, right? Like the reason that ETH was money in that context was because there were no additional, like there were no like crazy trust assumptions I had to take to like use that ETH as money. And it was sort of like heavily ingrained within the ecosystem, like really close to liquidity. All the users had ETH within that. If you recreated, like imagine restarting DeFi, and this time you have, you know, fully liquid cross-chain BTC and like good enough security solutions to the point where BTC can be like on par with the trust of a native asset. You get to the point where there really would be no reason to adopt like ETH or Solana or some other asset. So basically my thesis with that post was that like, was almost to paint a little bit of a dark picture, potentially. Like imagine if Bitcoin doesn't win the on-chain finance world, like ETH and Solana and other like native currencies of alt L1s become the fundamental collaterals within DeFi, or like ETH runs away with it. Bitcoin's monetary premium, I think, erodes significantly in that case. And if that's the case, then, you know, it might be, I mean, possibly that could be like the beginning of a downward spiral a little bit, especially if you, I mean, this is predicated on the thesis that like a lot of this crypto comes on chain in a big way. But the fact that all these new assets, all the innovation is sort of happening in other ecosystems with, you know, ETH or these other assets as trading pairs or sort of like use this money in those ecosystems, I think is a little bit, it's almost like a little bit concerning for Bitcoin. I think it's something that Bitcoin really needs to address. And Bitcoin DeFi to me like solves all of this. It's the renaissance of Bitcoin as money in the on-chain world. Decentralized money needs decentralized finance. There's no doubt in my mind about this.
Yeah. This is very interesting. Is this going to happen, you think, on Bitcoin as like native kind of like roll-ups on Bitcoin? Or can this happen in the Ethereum world? Was like, I mean, there's a very clear distinction, I think, that's often misunderstood as well, between Bitcoin staking, using it as a collateral, BTC, and kind of the Bitcoin scaling and Bitcoin L2 world. I see it as like totally different concepts, actually, that have very little in common if you look at it closely. But somehow they are still intertwined because one can like enable the other. It's more like a cultural shift, right? Making Bitcoin productive, making Bitcoin scalable and so on. Do you think the future of finance will be built on Bitcoin or will be settled on Bitcoin, let's say?
Yeah, it's a really great question. I don't necessarily know that the future of finance will be settled on Bitcoin, but I do know that there's a ton of demand for finance settled on Bitcoin. So we at least know that. So it basically what that means is, you know, there are $2 trillion worth of latent demand in the form of idle Bitcoin right now. Probably, I don't know, more than half of that, I think you can only actually activate if you have a fully trustless mechanism. I don't know that to be the case, but my guess is that we know like the largest Bitcoin holders in the world, like I said, they don't want to trust anyone. They only want to trust a non-custodial mechanism, which doesn't require them to trust, right? So building a Bitcoin L2 or some, you know, BitVM, Opcat, some sort of trustless mechanism unlocks a massive, massive amount of capital. There's no doubt in my mind about that. As for whether cross-chain Bitcoin is a lower market size there, it's a little bit hard to say. Like, I think there are different products for different types of people. You know, if you think about like the risk spectrum of users in the Bitcoin space, right now we're sort of targeting like the existing Bitcoin LSTs are targeting like the most degen of users. These are risk on users. I mean, this is like this market of just like, call it like small multi-sigs or like teams running multi-sigs and cross-chain Bitcoin. This is probably like, I don't know, 10 or $50 billion market or something like that. And then there's like a $500 billion market that is like, you know, something much more secure, like Lombard Ledger, 21 validators, super robust, like non-custodial, but not like as robust as like a true roll-up that, you know, rolls up to Bitcoin. This is like a much bigger market. And then there's like the true, you know, truly non-custodial finance where you have like a one event trust assumption that goes back to BitVM or Opcat. That then is maybe like the $1 trillion market or something like that. So I think it's different users for sure at different times. My assumption is that no matter what happens, cross-chain Bitcoin is going to be in super high demand. Because at the end of the day, like, I think the best DeFi protocols are not going to exist on a Bitcoin L2. The most innovative DeFi protocols right now are building in Ethereum. They're building in Solana. They're building on Base. They're building on, you know, Barachain and stuff. And I don't expect that to change anytime soon. So I think if you know, the highest yields, the best opportunities to put your Bitcoin to work are probably going to float to ETH ecosystems for the foreseeable future. But my assumption is that all of those robust DeFi protocols that bootstrap in other ecosystems will have some link back to Bitcoin, you know, trustless solutions such that they can access that big pool of capital.
Yeah, amazing. What do you think? Which role does Babylon play there? And actually, so you guys are from the beginning very, very Babylon aligned. And we also talked about it, like Babylon is one of the only systems that allow like true trustlessness and like self-custodia, like in all sorts on Bitcoin. And it's like one of the only protocols enabling this. But there are also others like that do enable Bitcoin staking and that have the same vision, that try like similar primitives and so on. What is your take on Babylon itself? And also, like, are you guys a Babylon project, or would you consider launching with some other protocols at some point? And yeah, what's your vision there?
Yeah, you're asking the tough questions here, aren't you? So Babylon, from the beginning, we knew was going to be, you know, way, way bigger than any other. I mean, Babylon is the biggest Bitcoin DeFi protocol, and there was no doubt in our mind that this is going to happen. Really, like, but what Babylon did was they activated the Bitcoin community in a way that you could only do if you were building a really creative, you know, expressive mechanism on Bitcoin L1. I think that was the big thing, was they started from a very principled base of like, we're going to work directly with the biggest Bitcoin holders in the world and build non-custodial DeFi directly on BTC L1. This is cool. This was very different than I think anything I'd seen before. At best, you're getting, you know, layer twos with multi-sigs and trust assumptions. So that was the basis of it. Lombard fundamentally, to me, is focused on the vision of turning Bitcoin into a productive asset. This can come in many different forms. Babylon staking is sort of the obvious place to start, because it is this very unique form of yield that people are comfortable with. Like, they're used to staking. They know that technical mechanisms with battle-tested systems are good places to put their money to work. And we knew there was just going to be a ton of excitement around this. So this has been, you know, when I think about like going around to talk to all the biggest Bitcoin holders in the world, Babylon is the easiest thing I can pitch. It's almost like you need to start with the lowest risk, lowest reward opportunity first, get people comfortable with the idea of Bitcoin leaving their cold storage wallet, and then start pitching them on all the other cool things we could do. I can't even start having conversations about like Bitcoin basis trading vaults if I haven't first started with like, you know, staking as a primitive. So yeah, Babylon's been an incredible team to work with, an incredible amount of protocol success so far, and Lombard's been pleased to work with them. I would say that, you know, Lombard's vision extends even bigger than just being a Bitcoin LST. But certainly, I think Bitcoin LST has been the focus at the time and has been a massive catalyst for growing Bitcoin liquidity within the DeFi ecosystem. And really, I think I will always think of this as the case that like Babylon was the turning point in Bitcoin DeFi, where now for the first time ever, there's an exogenous catalyst that was going to propel the space forward in the same way that like Uniswap and like DeFi, you know, Compound DeFi in summer 2020 did kick off until there was like some hyper incentivization that then drove everything to, you know, drove everybody on chain. Babylon's kind of doing the same thing with Bitcoin. Now everybody has a reason to put their Bitcoin to work.
Yeah. It's absolutely fascinating. I mean, there were a lot of projects already building on like Bitcoin scaling and kind of all of these concepts for a very, very long time, way before Babylon actually. But somehow Babylon managed to kickstart this Bitcoin renaissance in a say, like this cultural mind shift, right?
Yeah. I think it has to go back to just leaning into on chain. Like Babylon spoke the language of Bitcoin holders in a way that I don't think any other mechanism to date has.
Maybe it was also tied together with like the rise of Eigenlayer, right? Because then Babylon took the same concept.
Absolutely.
So Eigenlayer was very successful. So maybe Eigenlayer, we have to give a little bit of credit to Eigenlayer as well in that renaissance.
Sure.
But obviously
for the
Bitcoin community, and Babylon is doing a lot of research as well. Like not just around Bitcoin staking, but around like, just making Bitcoin more programmable as well. So it's really, really cool to see. I would love to dig a little bit into like the custody side of things. You mentioned obviously like, there's also for like big institute, there's different trust assumptions for like, unlocking like BTC liquidity for liquid staking and for like trustless on-chain staking. Institutions always try to go for the lowest risk. The problem around Bitcoin obviously is like, there is no like, it's not programmable. Like there are no smart contracts. You cannot build like a truly trustless system, like let's say for custody, like liquid staking. So there's Lido on Ethereum and it's a fully trustless system because they have smart contracts, but somehow that's not possible on Bitcoin. You kind of work your way with the Lombard Consortium, but maybe let's start a little bit around the custody side in general on Bitcoin. Like what are your takes there? Do you think this is a big blocker in order to make Bitcoin productive? And what can we do against it?
Yeah, I think this is the biggest issue within Bitcoin DeFi that is in the process of being solved. So the way to think about security of underlying Bitcoin within these systems is Babylon. So, there's sort of like different layers to this, right? There's layer one, the most secure mechanism, which is like a one event trust assumption. This is like BitVM or OpCat. These solutions are either in R&D right now or not available due to the lack of certain opcodes included within Bitcoin Script. So this is like a little bit of a work in progress, but coming very soon, call it within the next 1 to 2 years, I think you'll have some of these mechanisms live. Certainly
like,
Lombard's doing it.
Actually, I have a question on this. So
the
opcode, right? Like how are we going to push this through? Because this needs to like, Bitcoin is a decentralized system, right? Like it could also be that it never passes like the decentralized governance of Bitcoin and how to actually make it happen. Like how can anyone like maybe also listening to this podcast, how can we support like the Bitcoin renaissance of like pushing these upgrades through, which are necessary in order to make Bitcoin more programmable?
Yeah, it's a great quirkle of decentralized governance, I think. I think in particular has a pretty strong case because it was included in the original Bitcoin script and was sort of removed because it was, dead weight. And now maybe it has good usage. So I think there's a thesis for it coming back. But, what's interesting is I actually, when I was first getting into crypto, I think decentralized governance was like very exciting to me. Like it really resonated. These systems should be dynamic. They should be able to change. The more time I spend in crypto, the more time I realize that being dynamic is a bug, not a feature, at least for stuff trying to become money, right? Like trying to upgrade a massive system is like incredibly scary. I mean, you can wipe out $2 trillion in market cap with one mistake on Bitcoin, right? And it's like, there's all of these sort of butterfly effects that come from these changes. So I actually think that like the difficulty in upgrading to OpCat, even though it feels like there's a lot of momentum and there is growing momentum, the fact that it is so hard to change, I think is makes Bitcoin so much more valuable than if you were able to change it on a dime. So it's a good thing. I don't know exactly how all of that works, but I think, you know, the more we talk about it and the more we sort of start to build around it, I think mm-hmm. it'll only sort of create the case. Like, I think the biggest thing that's been missing from these kind of discussions has been like super clear evidence of user demand. And if we do that through other mechanisms, and then we up, you know, we basically like bring that back. So we build these mechanisms externally to the Bitcoin blockchain. And then ultimately we like implement Opcat or have these solutions. Like BitVM you can build on top without any opcode changes. But the opcode changes I think will be like really easy to pitch once there's like all this demand that's latent that Bitcoin could be attracting back in the form of transaction fees or deeper ties to Bitcoin L1 that we can, you know, bring back into the ecosystem through the integration of these things. But yeah, I know there's a lot of people who maybe don't fully agree with that, but it'll be fun to see what plays out.
Yeah, no, 100%. I mean, I'm not sure if this could happen, but actually I was thinking about like, there were like the mining block size wars in like 2016, 2017, where like the big blockers and the small blockers, and they were kind of deciding on the future of Bitcoin, and the small blockers won, like Bitcoin Cash was hard forked with the big blocks. Could the same thing happen now with like, kind of, let's say we have the people that want Bitcoin to become programmable and the others maybe just want it to stay that way, and then there's a hard fork? Do you think that's possible? That's plausible?
It's possible. It doesn't feel within reason at the moment. Like, I struggle to imagine that being the case, especially given that we have stuff like BitVM. Like, there are mechanisms that we can probably do well that allow for semi-trustless mostly trustless expressivity on top of Bitcoin. So if those mechanisms continue to, you know, have a lot of promise, then I think maybe we could get away without upgrades. If it got to the point where it was like BitVM was not working out, and you know the only way to upgrade was to add some additional opcodes, and there was like a big group. But I think everybody will coalesce around one primitive. Like, the worst outcome for Bitcoin would be two forks slightly adopted for both, ruins Bitcoin's, you know, status as like unchangeable monetary primitive. So I would be surprised if people don't. You know, it's almost like either the you know, Opcat crowd wins or loses, but either way the whole Bitcoin community probably sticks on that same chain.
Yeah, I mean, that I'm very convinced of that as well. I think, I mean, this happened with Bitcoin and Bitcoin Cash too. It was like a kind of it happened like shortly, and like, but it was very, very soon it was clear, like, okay, Bitcoin and the community decided for this thing and not for the other, even though there is a hard fork. Yeah.
Exactly. And to go back to that tweet we were just talking about, I mean, imagine the case where Bitcoin is like, no, pushing away from it. Like, here's the thing. At the end of the day, I think there would have to be some sort of fork eventually. Like, I think it would take a really long time, but eventually it'll happen. We don't, like, imagine BitVM doesn't work out, and the only way to include expressivity within the Bitcoin blockchain is through Opcat or covenants or some sort of upgrade to the chain. And the Bitcoin community is like, no, we're not going to upgrade. What is the outcome from there? Well, the outcome is everybody just uses their Bitcoin on centralized exchanges and centralized venues and other assets that can trustlessly, you know, interoperate throughout the DeFi ecosystem are going to, you know, gain monetary premium faster than Bitcoin is. Both of those are like really bad outcomes. It's kind of funny. I like to use this example. Like, when I was at Polychain, we invested in this project called Yellow Card, and Yellow Card was like the Coinbase of Africa. They were trying to like expand, you know, democratize access to Bitcoin within, you know, the region of the world that probably needs decentralized money, inflation resistant money the most. And yet the only way you could build that is like doing a custodial mechanism. You know, it's crazy to think that you can't really build the user experience you want to for like some of the most impactful apps without some sort of decentralized foundation. And it feels weird to me that many in the Bitcoin community would be against enabling this for Bitcoin. It's like, if you have decentralized money, but you can only use it in centralized custodial venues, have we really accomplished what Satoshi set out to accomplish? Probably not. So I think it is like such a natural transition for the asset that has solidified itself as the global store of value to then become the, you know, the core collateral for on-chain finance.
Yeah, it's very fascinating. And I love what you guys are doing at Lombard also with the, you're basically building with the Lombard Consortium, you're building like a kind of a system on top that also provides trust or like lowers trust assumptions to the depositors of Lombard. Maybe walk us a little bit through like how does this work? Like what are the challenges there for like building such a system? Because essentially it's like you're building like a custody account and then like progressively decentralizing it over time. Yep. What's like, like, how did you start? What were the challenges? Where do you stand? And what's the vision? Like, what's the end goal? Where will this Lombard Consortium, this system be like in the next few years?
Yep. Great question. And I'll tie it into your other question that I was answering earlier around like the different mechanisms for securing BTC. So I already talked about like fully trustless is like BitVM or Opcat. This is still R&D. It's like not ready just yet. One step up from that is like custodial mechanisms. So this is like WBTC, CBBTC. This is like some team, like an LST team who has a multi-sig or an exchange account that's just sort of like holding onto your money for you and then giving you an asset that's representative of that. This is like not particularly great. And then there's like a step up from that, which is like a Lombard's current design, which is like a trust minimized form of security where you have like, instead of just like one, you know, you think about like a team securing Bitcoin, that is like effectively one party, you know, that's like a one of one. Even if you have multiple parties, they're like not independent enough. There's like a lot of reasons that they would collude or sort of be together. Your security mechanism isn't that great. Lombard is like, okay, what if we took like the model of WBTC, which is like big reputable institutions securing a Bitcoin or rather securing assets and decentralize that. So the Lombard Consortium is going to be like some of the biggest mining pools out there, some of the biggest DeFi protocols may secure it, some of the biggest validators, some of the biggest crypto institutions that are involved in the Lombard ecosystem. And the goal is to create this, you know, we have Lombard Ledger, this Cosmos SDK chain. It'll have, you know, 21 validators. It'll be all of that Bitcoin sort of secured by this decentralized group. And so when you think about all of these solutions in, you know, in tandem, they form a bit of a spectrum. So it's like different Bitcoin users will demand different levels of security. The most degen of users, they don't really care. They don't know anything about security. You can get them to use a multi-sig from the team. You can get them to use a centralized exchange account. It doesn't matter. However, as you expand to like larger amounts of Bitcoin and more serious Bitcoin holders, you inevitably, like you basically have to form some sort of non-custodial thing. And Lombard is the only Bitcoin LST that's actually like taken this stance, which is kind of crazy to me. You know, this is like, I was just telling a buddy the other day, like, man, if all of these Bitcoin LSTs spent as much time thinking about product as they did about cutting corners, they would realize that like the most powerful thing you can create, the most powerful piece of technology you can create as Bitcoin LST is a non-custodial security primitive. And this is what Lombard's been doing from the start. This is the reason we built it on a consortium model from the beginning. This is the reason we're launching Lombard Ledger, trying to decentralize this. Like the biggest Bitcoin holders in the space will not accept like the sort of trust assumptions that other people are offering. It has to be a non-custodial mechanism. Now, I think the big question is, does it need to be a fully non-custodial mechanism, like a one-of-n trust assumption, like a BitVM or an Opcat, a ZK rollup, or can it be something else? Can it be like a consortium model or somewhere in between? And the answer to this is like, it's different, you know, different strokes for different folks, like different Bitcoin holders are going to view this differently, right? It's like back to that thing about, oh, you know, there's probably like a $10 billion market for the degens of degens or $50 billion, and then maybe like $500 billion for the kind of middle range people who are comfortable with like a really, really robust consortium. You know, I think like true non-custodial finance is like seeing a little bit of, it's sort of being challenged in DeFi right now, right? Because it's like most of DeFi is built upon USDC, which obviously has some embedded trust assumptions. But I think we're realizing like at some point for most users, a certain degree of trust assumption is enough. Bitcoin holders are gonna push that the furthest. So we'll sort of see what makes most sense. But I think what's pretty clear is like all the little self-custody TVL, like snapshot TVL games that are being played, there is a form of productization of that, which is like an actual non-custodial mechanism, which is what DeFi has been pitching for 6 or 7 years, which is what like Lombard's been saying needs to be the end state of this product from the beginning, which is going to win all this. And I actually think it's really cool. Like it's cool that, you know, no one trusts anyone in Bitcoin DeFi and, you know, non-custodial mechanisms will ultimately win out. Like I don't necessarily always feel the same about ETH DeFi, where it's like some of the most custodial mechanisms are actually winning in Bitcoin DeFi. I think over time it'll, you know, things will sort of shape the right way.
Yeah. I mean, this is a very common behavior in crypto, like optimizing short-term gains over long-term growth.
100%.
And
yeah,
the incentives are kind of messed up in crypto in general. So it's always great to see projects actually building like truly like innovative products. And it takes time. This is not going to happen overnight.
Yeah.
I'm very excited for what you guys are building, especially around the Lombard Ledger. So you mentioned Lombard Ledger. This is like a Cosmos chain, right? They're going to be validators, like the big mining pools, the big like staking providers. And this is basically going to be a decentralized bookkeeping of the Lombard Consortium on Bitcoin, right?
Exactly. Yeah. So Lombard Ledger will be a Comet. It's Comet BFT, Cosmos SDK chain, sort of a decentralization of the current like permissioned blockchain that operates the Lombard Consortium right now. We'll expand the validator set. 21 is an arbitrary number. I think we'll ultimately do much, much larger than that. But you're exactly right. Lombard Ledger sort of is the hub for all accounting within the Lombard ecosystem. So the consortium notarizes deposits, it enables minting of LBTC, it processes redemptions. Everything kind of goes through this one primitive. So you sort of have like, you know, Lombard Ledger then becomes this one source of trust assumption within the Lombard ecosystem. And everything kind of falls back to that. And again, like this goes back to it. Users are demanding that we have a trust model that they can get comfortable with. And it's not easy. Like, it's not easy to go this route. It's much easier for people. This is why people have done it, to just go and be like, oh, I have a Cepheu account. This is close enough. Trust me, I'm the team. This doesn't work at some scale. It's hard to build really robust, battle-tested security primitives that are objective and not subjective. Like, our goal is to create a security primitive that everybody in the world, regardless of who you are, can trust. If we haven't done that, we haven't succeeded. There are so many people, like Bitcoin DeFi is always funny because it's like, some LPs trust Cepheu, some LPs trust Kobo, some LPs trust this other custodian, some LPs trust none, some LP, like there's too many preferences. So if you create a security solution that's like too subjective towards a certain set of security assumptions that you think is good, you're missing out on a massive piece of the market. The goal here is like smart contracts that anybody can trust it, you know, in the world. I think that's the whole sort of point of DeFi in general. And yeah, I don't know. I think Lombard's doing a good job of pushing the Bitcoin space in that direction of more robust, more objective security mechanism.
Yeah, I 100% agree. I think all the big value transactions, like the big chunk of DeFi, it will tend towards the most decentralized system because this is where you have the most trust in the system. It's just very natural progression. Yeah.
Yeah.
I have the big question to me is like, is Lombard Ledger going to use Bitcoin security from Babylon as well?
Is it exactly? That's the plan.
That's
yeah,
amazing.
This was part
yeah.
of the original motivation for building a Cosmos SDK chain, was that so we could be IBC compatible. But yeah. Also, Cosmos SDK is just a great framework for building blockchains. So I think I think we would have done it either way. But yeah, we'll amazing. Be consumers of security.
Yeah, yeah, that's completes the flywheel. Very, very nice. Cool.
Exactly.
I'd love to talk a little bit about DeFi. Yeah. I mean, there's like 18 DeFi integrations. You guys are already on Ethereum, and you also, I think you just launched with the pre-deposit on Barra chain as well. And you don't really like, you just see about bringing LBTC, the Lombard Bitcoin, like to anywhere, right? To anywhere where DeFi is happening. Do you have any preferences there? And we talked about it earlier as well. It's quite interesting. You said like now is kind of the first time we have a DeFi Bitcoin renaissance as well. I think the only time, like in the last cycle, there was like Wrapped BTC was kind of the leader there. And there were some projects like Badger DAO, something like this, if you remember.
Yep.
They kind of tried to push this narrative forward as well. But now it's a different time, right? And it's really like, it's a real renaissance. We have much, much more. I mean, LBTC is already like 2 billion TVL or something. It's insane. Yeah, what's your DeFi strategy? How do you see the DeFi space? What's your alignment with other ecosystems? And yeah, how do you see this going forward?
Yeah, I love having this discussion. This is the exact thing that gets me out of bed every morning. This is like what propelled us at Lombard in our original vision. It was always about making Bitcoin a more productive asset. Like that is a massive, massive vision of putting $2 billion of capital to work. And you know, this starts with a Bitcoin LST. You mentioned a lot of the sort of predecessors. WBTC had a bit of its heyday in DeFi summer, but never really reached critical mass, right? Like yield on Aave for WBTC is like 10, 20 bips or something like that, basically nothing. WBTC sort of hasn't got to the point where on balance ETH or WBTC, people are still overwhelmingly choosing ETH. You know, Bitcoin as collateral has not become dominant within the ecosystem. BadgerDAO, a great effort to sort of onboard capital from the Bitcoin blockchain into, you know, top DeFi protocols. I actually led an investment into BadgerDAO, a $21 million round when I was at Polychain. I think I only lost Polychain money on that deal. BadgerDAO didn't quite come to fruition, but it was only it was a timing thing, not a fundamentals thing. I think that was the big thing. And you know, funny enough, the BadgerDAO guys are now, you know, Chris and the team are now building at Corn, which is an awesome protocol. And I think like what happened there was like we're always waiting for this catalyst. Like there had to be some exogenous shock to the system. In the same way, like you needed the comp token launch to hyper incentivize that then led to the, you know, it sort of like solidified the fundamentals effectively. This is the same thing that's happened with Babylon. Like Babylon has been the catalyst to onboard all this liquidity into DeFi. And this was, I mean, we saw this from the start. It's funny, like when we were first starting this project, like when we first like coming up with the idea, it took me like a good like 2-3 weeks to sit around and like think like, okay, are we really going to do this? Like, are we really going to build a Bitcoin liquid staking token? Like what does that even mean? Is that like actually a big vision, or are we just trying to like, you know, capture some short-term market opportunity? And it really is the big vision. And the vision is big because Babylon is the catalyst for onboarding Bitcoin to DeFi. Like the reason that WBTC, you know, didn't quite succeed and CBBTC, you know, hasn't maybe done as well as people were hoping was because there wasn't enough of a catalyst embedded. And that's really been the difference here. So like, I think we're going to look back in 5 years as Babylon as like a turning point for the entire BTC space, not just Bitcoin liquid staking. So like when we started this project, it only made sense. Like LBTC was only going to be successful if it became a widely adopted Bitcoin primitive. The same way that people look at like STETH as comparable in a collateral sense to ETH fundamentally. It's like naked ETH or STETH is kind of the same in people's eyes. I need that to be the same for Bitcoin. Like I'll know that LBTC has succeeded when people are trading ETH LBTC pairs as if LBTC is Bitcoin. And so we went to, you know, my thought here was like, we could build with these like, you know, Bitcoin DeFi protocols that are like forks of forks of forks, or we could just go to the best in the world, you know, go to Morpho, Gearbox, to Pendle, to Lombard just got listed on Aave, to stuff like Fluid and, you know, Veda, EtherFi. I mean, we went to the biggest symbiotic eigenlayer. We went to the biggest DeFi protocols in the world and, you know, figured out how to bring Bitcoin liquidity to them rather than trying to bring DeFi to Bitcoin. I think that was the big difference in our approach. And frankly, I think it's like what the markets demanded. And yeah, I like part of my thesis early on that I used to always say was like Lombard makes every L2 or chain a Bitcoin L2 or Bitcoin sidechain, in a sense that like with LBTC liquidity, Base is now one of the biggest L2s. And with LBTC liquidity, Barrachain is now maybe the biggest Bitcoin L2, you know? So I think, I still think cross-chain BTC will have a lot of fundamental demand, but I also think over time, as those bigger and bigger Bitcoin holders get onboarded, we're going to need even more secure mechanisms, like closer to a Bitcoin L2 or Bitcoin sidechain. So yeah, DeFi has kind of been my passion. This is like, I think one thing that has been core to the Lombard team from the start. We're kind of DeFi guys, you know, wading into the Bitcoin space rather than like Bitcoin guys trying to act like they know stuff about DeFi. So yeah, it's been awesome. I used to work at a Purpose protocol on Arbitrum, and I got to see so many protocols building, doing really cool stuff. And now I get to go work with all of them. So it's been a lot of fun.
Yeah. I mean, this is what's driving the Bitcoin Renaissance, right? Like the innovators from Ethereum, where like so many things have been tried, like DeFi kind of found product market fit. And now everything is moving back to Bitcoin. And it's the smart people and all the builders and innovators. It's really great to see. Yeah, I'm very excited. Exactly. So LBTC, obviously it's like a competitor to Wrapped Bitcoin and like CBBTC then, right? It's really competing to be like the on-chain BTC, like the the DeFi collateral, the BTC collateral.
I think of them as slightly different asset classes. Like the risk profile of a liquid staked token that's taking on Babylon risk and some chain risk plus, you know, some custody risk is a little bit different than just taking on like custody risk in the form of a WBTC or CBBTC. So like, it's possible they go head to head, but I really think of them as symbiotic. I mean, like Lombard sort of can't, like, I don't think we could have proliferated LBTC the way we did without the existence of like an unwrapped solution, like a CBBTC or a WBTC. So we've been very collaborative in the ecosystem with them. And I don't necessarily think that they're like direct competitors per se, but you know, there's some similarities for sure.
Yeah. I mean, it's going to be interesting how much actual slashing risk there will be for Babylon.
Yeah.
Because I mean, just from a custody standpoint, you guys will already be in a better position than Wrapped Bitcoin, because Wrapped Bitcoin is centralized custody. You guys are building a decentralized custody with the Lombard Ledger. So just from the custody standpoint, LBDC would probably make a better case. But then obviously there's potential slashing risk, which is very hard to vet, maybe.
You're pitching this better than I could. Okay. I'll have to get you on some BD calls.
Yeah, bring me on. We onboarded some Bitcoin whales already. Yeah, very bullish. I mean, there's a few people in this world that can make me more bullish about Bitcoin staking than you. So I really appreciate the conversation. Yeah, amazing.
Definitely.
Great insights.
And hey, I've appreciated you guys, you know, being big Lombard supporters since the very beginning. I think you guys were one of the first sort of alternative interfaces we were talking to, or like just distribution partners. You guys, I think, were the first to integrate the Lombard SDK, which allows people to, you know, natively mint through another front end. Like, you guys have kind of been like a partner we've built alongside this entire time. So yeah, I think we've learned a lot from you as well, and start of a very long journey.
Yeah, it's amazing. And it's great to see the updates as well. I mean, in the beginning, there was like a two-step process, staking and then minting LBTC. Now it's like there's a one-step process. So we are pushing forward on the UX. Like, you guys are pushing forward, and we are also integrating it. And it's great to enable Bitcoin staking opportunities. Like, for us as stake mods as well, we've seen a lot of demand for Bitcoin staking, for native Babylon staking, as well as Lombard staking. And yeah, it's like you said, there's different profiles of users, but it's definitely like two very, very interesting pitches, and they're not even that hard.
Yeah, definitely. I'm glad you caught a couple of the new features we just launched. Lombard has an awesome product team. These guys are meticulous as hell. I think you'll see that using LBTC is materially different than someone else, because the details matter to these guys. They're on, you know, they're all in 24/7, you know, to make this the best it can be. So yeah, certainly open to any feedback, but glad that some of the stuff they're working on is showing through.
Amazing. Jacob, thank you for being so generous with your time. It's been a pleasure to have you on.
Thank you for having me. Really appreciate it.
Cool. That was the Staking Insider podcast, where we explore the frontiers of staking with guests from leading protocols in this space. If you enjoyed this conversation, check out our previous and future episodes on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and YouTube. Happy staking.